Welcome to another edition of Mycotoxins and Chronic Illness. Today, it's my pleasure to be interviewing Dr. Daniel Pompa. And this is going to be a very interesting time. Dr. Pompa is a renowned researcher, educator. He writes wonderful, informative books. And today, we're going to cover a lot of his work. I'm especially interested in his work with fasting, which some of you might wonder, like, how we're going to fit this into this issue, but especially cellular detox. And really, most importantly, what he has really focused his work on is understanding the basis of chronic illness, the multiplicity of issues that are involved with it. So I'm going to start off with having Dr. Pompa tell us a little bit about what got you into this field and what drives you.
I can tell you I didn't choose it. It chose me. I was functioning as this healthy guy with a thriving practice, and I was racing bikes at the time, arguably the best time of my life, the healthiest time of my life. And then it wasn't like many people. It was like the bottom fell out and I didn't know what was going on. But, you know, it started simply. It started with just general fatigue. So I thought I was overtraining. And backed up and realized it's getting worse. All of a sudden it was headaches and then weird anxiety. And then I couldn't get to sleep. And then I would wake up in the middle of the night, couldn't fall back to sleep. Then my gut went and all of a sudden I was intolerant to foods, which never happened to me. And then I was irritable, then bizarre things. I, so many people are familiar with the symptoms, brain fog. I mean, if I walked down the street, I was riding 300 miles a week at the time on my bike. And here, if I took too long of a walk, I'd be exhausted, right? So what happened? Well, that took me on a journey to figure out what the heck happened and how to get my life back. And it was a journey. It was a journey. But everything I learned in the journey is now I'm blessed to teach doctors around the world, really what I call a multi-therapeutic approach, you know, to this. What's breaking down? What's wrong? And this is what we do to fix it.
Well, that is, I mean, you know, I find that, you know, the people who made this journey are the ones who really just have insights that really help us dig our way out. So, you know, when you look back, you know, what do you think were the hidden sources that really got you ill in the first place? And what are the ones that you think most people should pay attention to? Because what I want to emphasize for our listeners is that I think I've said this before in these series, but you don't wind up with a mycotoxin illness because you get exposed to mycotoxins. Okay. We are exposed to mycotoxins every day. Yeah. It is your immune system shifts. Something has happened to your body, and that's what we're talking about today, is what has shifted in there and how to change that back. So,
You know, I talk about it as a perfect storm. And if you remember the movie George Clooney, right, the 80s, The Perfect Storm. I guess it dates us. Other people are scratching their heads. Perfect what? It was a great movie, actually.
I can't believe it's that old.
I know, right? It was in the 80s, late 80s, I guess.
Yesterday. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, we're digressing here. But the movie did a good job of explaining that, you know, every 100 years or so, you get three literally storms that come together and meet. But because of that, you have a catastrophic storm where thousands die and it just, you know, wrecks everything in its path. Well, that's what's happening. That's what happened to me. But when people lose their lives unexplainably, it's a perfect storm. Three stressors come together: physical, chemical, emotional, two chemical, whatever combination, really doesn't matter. But right. You get three stressors and bam, your weakest genes get triggered. Trust me, they do. And all of a sudden the bottom falls out. And you know, to use myself as the example and to answer your question, you know, I think there's three big ones, causative factors, stressors that are so nasty that people either miss them or they glaze over them. They don't detox it correctly. They don't maybe even address it correctly, even if you know they find it. So we'll discuss all three. And really, at different times, I had to peel back these stressors. And once we do get to the cause, empty the stress bucket, as I call it, then our body can heal. And you made a great point, though. It's everyone wants it to be about the one thing. Oh, the mold exposure, you know, this exposure, that exposure. You know, it's not so simple. It really isn't. But, you know, in my case, I had a silver filling drilled out. I probably still had maybe 8 in my mouth. Who knows? I don't remember exact number. But as it turned out, it took me 4 years to figure this out. But when I had it out days later is when the fatigue started. I just didn't know, right? I'd never correlate. Yes. I thought I was overtraining, right. Like I said. You know, but the point was, is that was overflowed my stress bucket, right? Now I could say, oh, you know, why doesn't that happen to everybody? You know, but that was my catalyst, the straw that broke the camel's back, whatever you want to say. You know, no doubt I had been accumulating mercury in my brain for years. I wore contact lenses in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. And the number one adult source was the saline solution. It had thimerosal. We were putting it right in our brain. So yes, the fillings, the saline solution. I didn't get flu shots or vaccinations, you know, as people are today, which that would have been another potential problem. And yes, there was a time where I was eating tons of fish. I did it all. Okay, so mercury was part of my storm, you know, and yes, it was the thing that started. But I was also living in an old home at the time, which I realized had mold, right? But to your point, I could have lived there maybe another 10 years and been fine until I had this neurotoxic insult. Yes. Oh, and I was riding 300 miles a week, stressing physically my body. There was my perfect storm, right? Yep. And working ungodly hours, you know, so the bottom fell out. Ultimately, you know, what did I have to do? I had to address these, you know, things correctly. There's one more missing piece to it, right? So I said mold, typically. It's missed, and it's definitely detoxed incorrectly. Heavy metals, I would say most people go, I might have heavy metals. But the big pitfall here is it's typically detoxed incorrectly. They either use weak binders or strong IV binders, which are real binders or chelators, but they're used incorrectly. And like I said, it can make people worse. So the third one is hidden infections. Later, I discovered I had some wisdom teeth out. An infection built up in my jaw, and it was just crushing my immune system. You know, again, part of the perfect storm, you know, and I think these three things people miss or they don't handle correctly. So there's a long answer to a very simple question.
No, but that was actually an excellent answer, because I think it just brings up the other point that I always want to emphasize to people, is that medicine is set up to find A cause B, to be linear. I always say it's the bullet idea. You know, we're really good at fixing that, and we want everything to fit that model. And but if you're listening to this program, your illness doesn't fit that model. Okay, it fits this multi hit. I mean, and you can often partially recover from one of those hits along the way, but not fully. And that's what, you know, and that's why, so talk more about that, about how important it is to make sure that you've gone back and really cleaned up the body. I mean, I'd love to hear more about detox.
You said a great thing there, right? So people go, okay, they moved out of the moldy home, right? And, you know, look, I I'm better, but I'm not better. Or it's not lasting. And now I have this, and they just keep going on, right? Because number one, they probably didn't really get these accumulated biotoxins out of the brain, which is where it really matters. And then they didn't deal with the other problems. So I always say that cavitation, which is an infection in the jaw, we might have had a tooth pulled, or maybe it's a root canal. That may not be why you got sick. But what I have found dealing with people just like myself for the last 20 years is that unless you deal with that now, you won't get fully well. And, you know, that becomes an issue. Now, you might have had metals building up, whether it be lead, mercury, who knows what, building up in you for years. But now all of a sudden, if you don't deal with that load, that neurotoxic load, now you don't get fully well. So once you become sensitized to one neurotoxin, you become overly sensitized to all of them. So we have to, you know, deal with them correctly. And look, you know, what I've become more, you know, popular for was my cellular detox, even before I became popular for fasting. And we are going to talk about fasting, I promise. But the cellular detox, really, I mean, in a nutshell, real detox has to happen at the cell. And that's the mistake most people make, right? They've done colon cleanses. They've done saunas. They've done the 10-day cleanse. I mean, poopers, as I call them, right? You know, the 21-day cleanse they got somewhere. Their doctor gave them, it makes them poop a lot, right? I'm not against any of those things. I'm really not. The point, though, is none of those things got me well. Well, the real problem was is my cells were toxic, and I had to upregulate what the cells should be doing every day that was broken because of my neurotoxic stress bucket overflowing. You know, but the point is so what I teach is how to upregulate, and I have what I call my 5 R's is a roadmap of how you upregulate cell function to really detox at the cellular level. And if you can fix the cell, you will get well. First, you have to find your sources.
So just a quick outline of your 5 R's. We'll dance back because I have a lot more questions about your detox, but just a quick outline for the audience about the 5 R's.
Yeah, I mean, R1 is remove the source, right? You know, so, I mean, meaning if you're in a moldy home, get out, right? Or, you know, at least maybe do it correctly. You know, so you want to remove the sources. R2 is regenerating the cell membranes, and you have an outer membrane to your cell. You have inner membranes, and those membranes, as it turns out, are the most vital, really, function of the cell. I mean, nothing passes in the cell or out without a good functioning membrane. It's called cellular fluidity, and you can't detox a cell without approaching these membranes correctly. You can't have normal cell energy. You can't turn bad genes off unless you approach the cell membranes and fix them. It is critical. I teach classes on it. So don't ask the question, what's that one thing I can do, right? But I mean, just in a nutshell though, I mean, it's really about specific fats and you know, certain proteins and peptides. But the point is you have to address it. Okay, R3, to get through it, is you have to deal with the cell energy problem, right? So it's vital. Again, if we talk about detoxing the cell, how possibly can we detox a cell if we don't have enough cell gasoline and ATP?
Right.
The mitochondria is, you know, disrupted, right? So we absolutely need to, you know, consider every way, you know, that we need to restore cellular energy, and that's R3.
Yes.
And reduce the cellular inflammation. And a lot of my fasting strategies and dietary strategies is really how I address R3 and R4. And it's very, very important to downregulate the inflammation. And lastly is R5 is reestablishing methylation. Methylation parallels glutathione. And it's, you know, when the cell becomes more and more toxic, methylation tanks, and now bad genes get turned on. You can't detox normally without it.
Yep.
You know, so anyways, you know, that's just kind of a roadmap of
it's a beautiful roadmap. And you know, I just want to, you know, because it fits, you know, like it's interesting how the pathway goes, because like, you know, in one of the things that I'm very interested in is this cell danger response, which we talk about a lot. And that is that it's the mitochondria sensing the danger, which that turns down their energy production. It increases inflammation. You know, it's like a reaction. And so the way you're describing, and also tightens up the cell membranes and makes them a little more less fluid. And so you're just doing a beautiful job of going, okay, these are the areas that need to be addressed. I mean, that I just love the way you laid that out. So when you deal with like the cellular inflammation, where are you starting? Any particular areas or?
I think we all start from the same area, because look, it's not like we can control right away the toxins, right? We can't control, we can't do certain things right away. So therefore, let's control what we can control. And it's one of the big drivers of cellular inflammation, and that's diet, right? So getting bad oils that most people have in their diet that they don't think about. I mean, everyone's worried about gluten, but they're not so worried about vegetable oil, canola oil, and these rancid oils that make their way right into your membrane and cause dysfunction for about 3 months. So we have to fix that, okay? We have to change your oil, a good oil change. But, you know, and I think, you know, getting, there's multiple different diets. And one of my things that I talk about in my book is diet variation. I'm a believer in purposely changing diets. So I see where they are. And oftentimes it's just like, hey, let's just remove grains and sugar right now, just to, you know, decrease, you know, the inflammation. And then, you know, maybe we just clean up their diet even more basic. But regardless of that, the diet is an evolution. I don't hang my hat in paleo, vegan, vegetarian, keto. Yeah. I talk about all those diets and I utilize all those diets. I even utilize carnivore diet, but it's the variation and changing the diet that actually creates hormetic stress on the body, which creates a hormone optimization, creates a more diverse gut. So the thing that people are missing is the change in the diet happens to be the magic, not the diet. Everyone's arguing about which diet. When we look at ancient cultures, they changed diet. They were forced to change diet. And the more I researched it, the more I realized the diet changes the magic, not the diet.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That is just really, I mean, that is my experience, because I have patients who've done every diet in the book. And they make those, when, you know, once they clean it up, I mean, you got to do like your first step, you got to clean it up.
Clean it up.
And once you do that, I've often wondered why we would see that. Like, you know, this change, no, a month, 2 months, there's like, wow, this magic's happening. And then they go to another one. And that's, you know, and it does mimic.
And you're right. And you know why these diet people pick on each other, right? It's because, you know, if you stay on any diet long, it will always cause problems, right? So if you're a vegan, vegetarian diet long, it's going to cause you problems one way or the other. If you're on a keto diet long, it creates different problems. It just does, right? It's like, you know, it's like, I mean, I could pick on every diet long term, but when you first change that diet, that's your diet. And by the way, that's why people stay on it, because it helps them.
They remember. Right.
So that's why they're like, oh, this is my diet, because it helped them. But they don't realize now, a year later, they have new symptoms because of the diet that helped them when they changed it originally.
No. Right there, I think, I just want to emphasize, I mean, I always hope that people hear the important information, because I think that is golden. You know, because I'm about old. I remember, you know, back when macrobiotic diets were the big things. And I said they were great for 3 months.
Yeah.
But you got sick if you kept on them.
It's true.
You know, and but you're kind of like bringing me to that next level of realization that, it's the change up. It's allowing. So tell me more. So, I mean, I don't want, because is it its effect on the microbiome? Is it, you know, just the stimulus?
Yeah.
It's
all of it. But we'll start with what you said, because it's true. The microbiome, you know, here we have, you know, a new understanding of the microbiome, and everyone's talking about it, right? But what are people doing to really change it? They're giving people probiotics, right? You know, there's some benefit, right? But, you know, if it were just that easy, we wouldn't still be talking about it, right? So obviously it's very limited. And with all the new microbiome testing, really, that didn't do much either. Okay, great. What do we do with that now? We thought we were going to be able to tell people what diet to eat or not.
Yeah, a little too, sometimes too much information.
Yeah. But you know what? One thing we did gain from it was, healthier people seem to have all this great diversity. Unhealthy people seem not to, right? Well, how do we get more diversity then, if that matters for a better immune system and better brain function? Well, stress the microbiome. That's what you do. So, you know, hormesis means that if we add a stress to this vitalistic human, you know, just the right amount of stress, man, we can really do some amazing, you know, benefit to that. Or not enough stress, won't change. Too much stress, and you end up with a new problem, right? Exercise is a great example. If you don't exercise enough or not at all, no benefit. Perfect amount, you feel it, you're stronger, you're getting better. but then you don't change anything, and then all of a sudden it's not working anymore, or you exercise too much and you have a stress reaction. That's not good either. Okay, so if we change diet, what we know is that it can shift and stress the microbiome. It has to change. Think about it. All of a sudden now you're eating vegetables and you haven't eaten vegetables in a long time. Okay, maybe that's a bad example. How about this? Now all of a sudden you're eating just all this meat and fat, right? And now, oh, I'm not used to that. So the microbiome has to upregulate different bacteria to create different enzymes, to create different hormones, etc., based on the dietary change.
Yeah.
Every time you're switching your diet, you're forcing, stressing the bacteria, the microbiome to adapt.
You're exercising your microbiome.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Absolutely. Right. So just like exercise, if you do the same exercise again and again and again, I promise you, not only are you not improving, you're actually diminishing.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So you do it. You hire a trainer and they go, oh, we're going to do this today. And next week we're doing this. Next week we're going to do high reps. And you're going, oh my gosh, he keeps changing it to keep the stress going. So you keep adapting and becoming stronger. No different with the microbiome. Wow. So I have strategies called feast, famine, cycling. We're weekly. We'll fast a day, we'll feast, and we'll feast and we'll fast. And we have monthly strategies, and I have seasonal strategies, you know, of how to, even with fasting, throw in fast and throw in feast, and we can add stress or change your diet, you know, different ways seasonally, as we were, you know, kind of referencing.
Might be, yeah, a general
diet has to change. But, excuse me. I got so excited about the topic, I choked myself. But some of the monthly changes are hormonally related. And I'll give you an example. This is something, because I coach doctors, we discovered women before their cycle crave carbohydrates. Maybe, just maybe, the innate intelligence is telling us something. But see, women would take it, that's when I break my diet. That's when I reach for this, the chocolate, the kit, whatever it is. Maybe the body knows something. So we started purposely bringing in high carbs, healthy carbs, and very high amounts right before the cycle. And lo and behold, magic happened. And then during the cycle, or maybe after, we either do some type of partial fast or some restriction. But what we've emulated is a feast and a famine. And lo and behold, because we now know that you need carbohydrates to pump up insulin, and insulin is needed for many hormone conversions, like estrogen, like thyroid hormone. Thyroid hormone go from T4 stored to an active form of T3. You need insulin. So therefore, so many people are not understanding that, and they're low carb too long. You need variation. Feast famine is a way to do it. So optimization there as well.
Well, hormone, you know, I mean, I just love that, you know, it's living with life, you know. I mean, again, where too many of our diet choices and too many of our are still based, like I said, the problem with medicine is we want A causes B, and we want to do the same thing with the diet, realizing this is process and we don't always understand every detail. But when we look, what you're describing is what people do. I mean, it's always a good idea to look at what happens in, if you don't have a supermarket, you know, if you have to depend on nature to survive, how would you be eating? And just the beauty of your of your ideas is that it fits right in with that model of that mono eating is something that doesn't happen.
No, it's true. You know, and our bodies are genetically designed as fast. You know, fasting is a stress. We're kind of talking, you know, now that we kind of have everyone understanding that stress can be good or not good, right? If we can cleverly, you know, use stress as a form of exercise, and we go, oh, we get stronger. Well, if fasting is a stress, and it is, then can we use that to obviously fix the microbiome, fix the gut, or just harness innate intelligence during a fast and watch the magic happen? Because the body heals during times of fasting. Animals do it instinctively. If they're injured or sick, they don't eat. Humans, we need to be taught sometimes.
Well, I think most of us get the idea not to eat when we're acutely ill. I mean, that's true. Part of, like, we call sickness behavior.
It's true.
But But once you're chronically ill, it's hard to, you adapt.
Absolutely. And you know, and again, when you're chronically ill, you remember the premise of hormesis, right? Not, if there's no stress, not good. The right amount of stress, too much stress, not good. So fasting can be too much. So you have to work fasting this new stress into what your body can adapt to. And remember, if your body doesn't adapt, a good stress becomes bad, right? So we don't want that, but you know, we're clever on how we use fasting strategies. And you know, 5-day fast is something that I taught back in the 90s, you know, so I was into fasting before, you know, it was, you know, cool.
Right.
It was me and some natural hygiene society guys that, you know, all they ate was vegetables, and I'm looking at they look catabolic, and I'm like, I know it's not fasting. It must be their diet, you know, because too long in one diet.
Right.
But we did resonate around fasting. And, you know, when you look at every religion on the planet, they disagree on everything except one thing, fasting.
Yep.
Right. So there must be something here. But, you know, I believe it does harness the innate intelligence. There's such an amazing intelligence that's God put in us that heals. But, you know, we just have to harness it. Yes, we have to remove the interference. That was the first part of the conversation. But harnessing it is another. Fasting can do that. When you look at the benefits of a fast, and when I look, you could fast for a day and there's some benefits, right? You could fast for 12 hours and there's some benefits. We call that daily intermittent fasting. But what's missing in the conversation today is the longer fast. And years ago, I was doing 5-day fasts. And how did I end up at 5 days? Because I realized it took people about 3 days before they felt good. You know, the first 3 days were hell because they were typically, you know, their cells were inflamed, not functioning. They couldn't survive on fat, right? They were like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I don't have glucose. And then day four would come and they'd go, oh, I actually feel really good. And they're out in their yard, right? So I'd go, okay, if four is a good day, let's go one more day to five. That's honestly how I ended up at a 5-day fast. Now there's science around this, that 5-day fast, there's magic, because by day four, you hit something called max autophagy. And I don't know how much you've spoken about this, but
We haven't, so it'd be good to talk a little bit about it. Yeah.
So autophagy, it is a natural way to detox. Autophagy means that your body's so smart and wants to survive, it would never eat your good cells or tissue. No, it's smarter than that. Innate intelligence is smart. It needs energy to survive. So it goes after your bad cells. They're called senescent cells, zombie cells. They live too long and they cause mischief. They drive inflammation. They recruit other cells to do nothing as well. They're like government workers, right? You're paying them energy and they're doing nothing. They're sitting around causing trouble. So that's what they have. And the older we get, unfortunately, the more of these we get, right? But when you're unhealthy, you have a whole lot. So how do we clean them up? Autophagy. And the 2016 Nobel Prize was won by a Japanese gentleman who really brought this to light. In a state of fasting, your body eats the bad cells, the rubbish, the bad DNA for energy, and it takes these senescent old cells out. The point is, though, is that that happens about day four at a very maximum level. And in my book, I talk about how to know when you're in max autophagy. But something else happens magical day five. You don't just get rid of that bad cell. Your body's too smart for that.
Yeah.
It stimulates a stem cell to replace it. And when you replace that cell, it's not now the zombie senescent cell. It's a vibrant young cell who's ready to work and wants to work. And you know, if it's an immune cell, it's ready to attack. Unlike the immune senescent cell that doesn't want to do anything.
Yes.
So now you're replacing bad cells with new cells. That max stem cell rise happens on day five.
Wow.
So that's how we ended up 5-day fast. Now, I do a lot of water fasting, and I have for many years. I teach a lot of partial fasting, which I have for years, which is, you know, maybe you eat like 500-600 calories, get protein under 20 grams. That's in definition of a partial fast. So you can eat a little bit, and you still get some autophagy, or you can just do water. which is still my favorite type of fast, because once I'm not eating, I don't want to eat. But when I'm eating a little bit, I tend to want to keep eating.
Okay. Yeah, that is interesting. And just one thing I want to mention is that many patients feel that fasting would be too much. And what I have found is that occasionally, yes, because you start to dump, and if you really can't detox, and we're going to talk more about that, but don't be sure. It doesn't hurt to try a little bit and see how you do, because I've been surprised by how many people. It just lets them realize, even though it doesn't cure if you just do a little bit, but it lets you know how much what you've been, that your microbiome and your digestion and your liver is contributing to how bad you feel. You know, it can be a real hint.
You made a really good point, though. One fast doesn't cure you. You might go, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I just was on a call with someone today. One fast and took their psoriasis away. Are they cured? No. They still have some other things, right? Okay, it just happened to be that thing that helped them, you know, with that particular fast. Each fast, you have a different level of healing. In my book, I talk about the importance of multiple fasts. But you also made another good point. You don't just run a marathon, right? Yeah. Who does that? You might finish, but you'll have a lot of bruises along the way, right? And your results won't be great. So in my book, I talk about, there's basically each chapter leads you to what you do before the fast. Right, you know, so you don't just fast, and it's really, you know, about leading you
preparation
up. Preparation, you know, and then there's options for people. Most sick and challenged people that are listening, you know, you start with, you know, just a partial fast, and maybe it's just, you know, a day or two, and that's that, where we're eating just less for a period of time, you know, and we build on it. So it is different for everybody, but there's things you can do. A lot of my feast, famine, cycling, where we start to just narrow down your eating window in a day. And I call it mitochondrial fitness. So in other words, you think of your mitochondria, that's where you make energy. When you're sick, they're not fit at all. Well, how do we get them more fit? We stress them. But remember, the stress for me is different than stress for you. So in my book, I teach how to add a little bit of stress to the mitochondria to make them stronger, or it's called mitophagy, where you get rid of the bad ones. The bad cells don't adapt, and then the body will get rid of them. So we stress the mitochondria with feast famine. So we might go periods like half a day without food, see how you do, right? And then a little less, and then a little less, and maybe a whole day without food. We're stressing the mitochondria a little bit at a time, mitochondrial fitness. And see, if we do enough of this feast, famine, cycling, by the time we get to the fast, no problem, even for sick people.
But that is so important, because I said, you know, one of the things that really turns people off when they have a significant toxin load is if they lose weight with a fast too quickly. And that's something I want you to talk about. They will often be really uncomfortable. But one of the things, I just love the way you're nailing, you know, how important the mitochondria are at modulating what's going on in the body, you know, and just, you know, and remind people that stress, I mean, just the basic thing that everybody loves herbs. Well, most of the antioxidant herbs are pro-oxidant stressors, and it's your body's response. So over and over again.
That's hormesis.
Yeah, that's hormesis. That is it. And that's just such an important
part. Herbs work because they're literally a little toxin, and they actually create a little stress.
and so just to remind people, because when people hear stress, they go, no, but what you're talking about is really how to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
The best way.
Yeah.
You know,
you brought a good point up, though. Like in my book, I have something called the fasting trio. Where did this come from? It's three things that I have very sick people take when they fast.
Yeah, that's
it's cool. Because I had a Facebook, it's called Fasting for a Purpose, right? And there's a reason why it was called Fasting for a Purpose, because of my son and my wife came up with the name, because we fasted him out of a jam. You know, the Bible talks about, you don't just pray, you fast and pray when you're in some real deep, you know what. So it's a, prayer alone won't work with this one. We need to fast and pray. And that's where that page came from.
Wow.
The bottom line is that in that group, you know, so many people and doing big group fast, you learn a lot. And when people, you know, dump a lot of toxins, we were like, oh, you know, let's try this because we have a lot of people to try with. And then, you know, wow, that worked, right? So it's, there's a product called Bind that I'd created for my detox. But by taking Bind, it stays in the gut. When you're fasting, a lot of the toxins get brought into the liver and bind to bile. And then that bile gets dumped in the gut and you just keep auto-intoxicating. And oh my gosh, I feel horrible. So Bind acts as a catcher's mitt to pull it all the way out of the body and you don't auto-intoxicate. And then we use another one called Fast Tonic. It's a molecular hydrogen, which it reduces a lot of the hydroxy radicals that get released for toxic people when they fast. And then another product is Cytodetox, which systemically just cleans up for people. But putting the three together when people are fasting can really mitigate a lot of that toxic.
Right. That's excellent. That's what I think is people should remember and really try these, because that's where the you get bitten by excessive zeal to get on that fast, and then you feel sick. And I really like the Bind because that so many people don't understand that your body tries to hold on to bile because it's a very important resource, and so you reabsorb a lot of it. And if it's and the amount of toxins that we are dealing with today is so much greater than the system was designed for, you know, that I think we get into this trouble. And that's why
absolutely,
you know, using these things that will bind the toxins that are on the bile and not let the bile be reabsorbed is really kind of freshening the system, really cleaning you out.
Exactly.
I'm glad that you've got something that helps that, because that's a big problem. You know, and so when you're working through, you know, you talk about cellular healing. Just I want to hear your stories. Each one of them is like lighting things up for me. So let me hear your story around cellular healing.
Well, you know, when you look at why people get sick, I'm going to draw something here. hopefully my pen can handle it. All right. So I'm going to draw a visual for you because I think a visual is worth learning and it answers your question. But that, my friends, is a three-legged stool. Not very pretty, is it? Okay. But think about why people are getting sick. And then you think about how we can get people well. Well, we know that certain genes are getting triggered. So in this leg, I'm going to put DNA. Remember I said when I hit my perfect storm of stressors, it triggered a lot of genes. Right? You may have got a thyroid condition. That gene was triggered, right? The old dogma was, oh, you just got it because your parents had it or one of them.
Right.
No, not so simple, right?
Yeah.
You know, these genes are triggered and turned on. But when we really understand epigenetics, number one, what's missing is we can turn these genes off. And there's strategies that do that. It's magic. However, if you still have the stress there that turned them on, you're not turning them off. And
right.
That brings me to this leg, okay? And we already discussed it. This is these three storms, right? The perfect storm of stress. Okay, that is the stressors that triggers the gene. And we have to get rid of those, right? And that's where the detox comes in at the cellular level, right? And that's where getting out of your stressful situations, all that's important. The last leg we talked about, I'll just write gut there because it's a shorter word than microbiome. But we know that the microbiome plays a big role today, especially with toxic people. So toxins and stress affect the microbiome. The microbiome affects the DNA. So you see, every one of these legs are tied into one another, right? The stressor, the gene getting triggered, the microbiome's effect on our DNA and our genes, and then even the toxic stress on our microbiome, right? A lot of people are trying to fix the gut today, but how do you fix a gut if you have infection in your mouth flowing in your gut every day? It's impossible, right? Or mercury fillings, you know, that are dropping mercury in your gut every day. That's like a, you know, trying to replace the fish in the river again and again and again, and the microalgaes, and, you know, and 20 miles upstream, there's a factory dumping mercury, and good luck, right? It's, you have to go upstream.
Yeah.
So, okay. So this is how people are getting sick, right? Meaning that the three-legged stool has an analogy. If one leg's not there, it doesn't hold up. So if one of these things isn't addressed, it doesn't hold up. So a lot of my cellular work is about turning off genes, right? And we talked about the five R's. So I kind of put that here. The detox, we're using real chelators and binders correctly, upregulating cell function. So it's a very different method of detox. And then all of these ancient healing strategies, the diet variation, the feast famine, the fasting, that's really how we're fixing the gut. All of that is what I call a multi-therapeutic approach. We're putting it together with all the strategies. If one of them's missing, you're not helping people today, right? So everyone wants it to be about fix the gut, you get well. Not so simple.
I think you can see. I mean, this is, you know, what's happened over the last 40 years is this, the simple fixes did work. That, I mean, on most people, because when I started doing this work, I mean, yeah, actually, even in the mid 80s, it was easy in the sense that, you know, you cleaned up somebody's diet and most of them got better. You gave them a little thyroid and it just like put things back and, you know, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And each decade, we're seeing sicker and harder to fix, harder to help people, you know, and younger people. I mean, that's what's really, and I'm talking about what's really inspires me these days is that we see so many people who are in their teenage years and 20s, they just, that have illnesses that we just never expect to see in young people. I mean, forgetting about autism, which is coming through the roof.
You're right. I mean, my kids are from 25 to 17 is my youngest. And, you know, they say, Dad, all of our friends are on, every one of them are on medications.
Yeah.
I mean, they have autoimmune, they have thyroid problems. That didn't, when I was a kid, there was nobody that was taking medications in my classrooms, you know. Yeah. Every once in a while you had like someone that was on an inhaler and it was like a rare thing and they were embarrassed and hit it because, you know, no one else was doing such things, right? You know, but today you're right. I mean, this is an epidemic. It's a pandemic, you know, and I don't want to get your, you know, things shut down here, but think about the jab that people are getting today. You know, what's this going to do? We're bringing in a micro RNA, forcing the DNA to produce a spiked protein, which we don't know a lot about. And then our body's producing antibodies to that, which we don't even know if those antibodies are going to attack other tissue. Oh, in past studies, they did. You know, my gosh, where are we going to be? Where are we going to be?
It's a difficult situation. You know, I mean, it really is. You know, when we jump with both feet into a solution that, you know, I've always found vaccines to be difficult because I've seen where they work and I've seen where they hurt. And I think it's the numbers of vaccine my issue with vaccines is the adjuvants often, it's the insult, it's because we're slapping the immune system. You know, when you know, we're not introducing a bug, but because we don't want to get people sick, we don't give them the whole bug. So we give them just a little piece, but then we have to give other things to tell the immune system to take notice. This is a big deal because that's without a big yell, your immune system isn't going to react to everything because we don't want it to. We get in trouble. And so my big frustration, we don't want to go too much into COVID, but my big frustration is that we have so many therapies that can, if not prevent, ameliorate. People don't have to be dying. I mean, I'm sure some people are going to die. I'm not going to save everybody, but we could do a lot. And we just haven't. I mean, my website was shut down, you know, right in the beginning because we wrote about, using nasal peroxide.
I stopped doing social media just because like, I'm tired of it. I'm, you know, shutting down. If I can't speak it, I'm done, you know? So,
yeah. Well, no, but it's difficult because I said, I don't want to go too deep into this, but my problem is that both sides, because I'm in the middle. I'm friends with people who are, you know, to the point that it's a hoax, and friends with people who, like, you know, think the best thing that we've ever done is the vaccine. And, you know, there is reality, different levels to both. I mean, because It's just a shame. I mean, it's real. I mean, whether it was man created,
whether they let it go, put all that aside and go, okay, look,
it's a problem.
Because of my philosophy, me and my family, we tried to get it right out of the gate, you know, build natural immunity, and we're not in the
group. There's
some people that are in a group that, you know, yeah, you should avoid it, right? But we were the opposite. We wanted to get exposed. Took me 3 different attempts, by the way, to get it, but I got it, and I got natural immunity. You know, look, that was my approach from the beginning. My philosophy is, you know, there's nothing better than my immune system, nothing, right? And I'll do things to better, you know, what God has already done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think balance in our approach, and, you know, and I have seen it. I have had many patients, you know, I said, who I think the vaccine is the better way because of their, and I have other patients who are so sick that the vaccine, because it may act, there are issues with how it then stimulates your immune system. It overregulates for some people, and that's why we're seeing the reactions that we're seeing.
Everyone that's, you know, if you choose to take it, you're in a phase 3 trial. I mean, nobody, including me, can tell you that it's safe, not safe for you, because the truth is nobody knows, and that's the truth, and your doctor should tell you that.
That's totally true. I mean, the first year out, normally that would be the first year would be the phase 2 trial.
That's right.
But before we go, so we haven't burnt ourselves too bad on that third rail. Those people come from New York. That was the third rail was on the subway. That was the power. So you didn't want to touch that one.
Yeah, right. I got it. The third rail. I like that.
It is. I mean, that really.
No, it is. You can see how gently I went into it. I was.
Yeah,
like,
no, I know. We're in this middle, and I said I wish we could have a really good conversation about what we can do, and I just remind people that there are therapies that seem to be working well. If people do get ill. But probably the most important thing is to have a well-balanced immune system. And that, you know, brings us back to what you're trying to do for us. Yeah, no, exactly.
You know, on that note, you know, one of the early things, I did a Facebook Live on it. It was, I forget who wrote the article. I'll probably think of it in a moment. But he said, look, if you look at the people, even young people who are getting sick from COVID, they all have one thing really in common, whether you're 80 or whether you're 35, they have a lot of immunosenescent cells. Now, what is that? You kind of have a little background here for it, folks, but you know, what it means is you have immune cells that are living too long. Remember the zombies that don't want to work? Yeah, that's true. So if you're 35 and you have, for different reasons, have too many of these immunosenescent cells, then yes, COVID, you know, could really knock you on your butt, right? Okay, so then the question begs then, well, what can we do? You know, what can we do to better our immune system? Because we know that if we can decrease these immunosenescent cells, according to the scientist that wrote the article, man, we are going to basically be able to protect ourselves, right, from these future ones that are coming still. Okay, well, fasting, it's cheap. I got great news for you. It's free, right? Because I already went through the science that the easiest, cheapest way to get rid of senescent cells is fasting. You know, it's interesting because when I was into fasting in the 90s, the big criticism of fasting was it lowers your immune system and it's not.
Yeah, right.
You know where they came up with that? Is because when you're in a fasted state, you have this massive drop in white blood cells. Here's what we didn't know then. We didn't know about autophagy, right?
Yes.
So we didn't realize that the intelligence of the body was wiping out immunosenescent cells, you know, the bad immune cells, and that's why it dropped, you know, and then, you know, give it a month, you know, even 2 weeks, and you have this beautiful back rise with fresh, aggressive fighters again because of the stem cell stimulation and creating new immuno cells.
This fits in. I mean, not so much new, but research over the last years on chronic fatigue, on MS, You know, I mean, we're seeing this same thing where, you know, we don't have cause and effect, but we do see that there are increased levels of senescent immune cells, especially CD8 cells, against Epstein-Barr virus. You know, right. So it's not that the virus is causing disease, but there's a process that's going on in your immune system where it's not, because of these excess senescent cells that aren't functioning well,
right.
You're screwing up the communications. I mean, because your body is one big soup of communications. And when you have cells, especially immune cells, that aren't listening to the programming, to the back and forth, you're not going to function well.
Right.
You know, and I think, again, we have to keep remembering that we are a very complex communication system. And if you've got old, deaf cells, they're not like me. If you can't hear, you're not going to do as well in an emergency. You know, you're going to take the wrong steps. And so you're right. I mean, fasting, it's funny because so many times I've bumped into fasting, and I have many patients who've gone to fasting clinics and have done well. But what I'm hearing from you, and what really is striking me, is that the ones who really were chronically ill, they never stayed well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, they did it as a marathon, not as a new way of retraining
mm-hmm.
their systems.
Absolutely.
And really, yeah, you know, and really rebuilding. It was just okay. So they got a bump.
Yeah.
But not a real.
We have to emulate ancient cultures. You know, our bodies are set up to survive. You know, and if we utilize, fasting is a tool. And you know, you don't use the tool the same all the time, right? And you can use the tool differently. And there's, you know, even within the fasting tool set, there's different tools, right? There's daily intermittent fasting. There's longer fast. There's partial fast. There, you know, I mean, there's many different types of fast. And, you know, utilize, my advice to everyone is educate yourself in this area. It's a very, very powerful tool. But remember, it's a tool. And remember, it's a stress. And if you overstress, then it's not good, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't stress, it's not good. You need the stress. Our bodies are designed for it.
Well, tell me more about where people, I mean, because I said, I, you know, you've really excited me, and I'm already planning, because I love to eat. Okay. I'm one of those people who, like, you know, when you go anywhere, is where are we having lunch? Is my first question. You know, but I have fasted here and there, and it does. And I always do intermittent fasting all the time. I usually try to go at least 12 to 16 hours without eating for at least most of the days of the week. But still, I haven't been quite ready to like commit to a 5-day fast. So if I wanted to learn more about that and really prepare myself, what are some of the things that you have, some of the resources that you have for folks?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to my book. It's not even on Amazon yet. I just kind of released it to my followers because it right now it needs to go through one more edit. So I just put it out privately.
It's a beta phase.
I'll give it to your group. You can get it. If you go to beyondfastingbook.com. So Beyond Fasting, that's the name of the book, Beyond Fasting. So beyondfastingbook.com, you can grab a book there.
Okay, good. We'll make sure it's in the in our gift section, you know, because I think that would be a real good beginning place. And and so you kind of outline. I mean, because the thing I'm really interested in is how to make sure that I can begin to think about the diet choices in a way. I mean, like I just like the way you built it together fasting and changing diets, but it still sounds like there's a lot of moving parts that maybe is easy to you because you've been doing it a long time. But
chapter 3 and 4, the diet variation strategies, weekly, monthly, you know, seasonally, that's all in there. And, you know, chapter 1, I talk about, you know, getting our cells to become more fat adapted, because if you go into a fast fat adapted, you're going to hit autophagy much sooner. So, but it takes you step by step each chapter. By chapter 6, you're ready, you know, so. There you go.
I'm ready for the vision quest. Okay. I mean, that's so interesting, because I mean, that is the essence of the vision quest is you know, that 4 days without eating.
Yeah, no, I, you know, and again, it becomes so easy. But you need a little mitochondrial fitness first. It walks you through.
Yeah. Well, I mean that is it. So any tips just before we wrap up? Any tips to you know, as far as I guess if someone has never fasted and they just wanted to, like, you know, dip their toe into this, you know, where would they start? What should they think about for that first foray?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think, you know, getting yourself used to, you know, in the state of fasting is a very important thing. Meaning what you already said you did, right? Skip a meal, right? See how you do, right? I mean, you know, that's a great place to start. Skip breakfast, skip dinner, what you choose, right? Whatever it is, right? And through the night, typically you're going to just automatically fast 8 or 10 hours because you're sleeping, right? And then skip a meal. And hey, you just did your first fast, right? You know, and then go maybe a couple days with just eating 500 calories. Indeed. Now, again, you can eat 500 calories, but if you ate a lot of the calories from protein, you're going to shut down autophagy. So if you're a bigger person, you might be able to do 20, 25 grams a day of protein and not shut down autophagy. But if you're smaller, it's probably more like 15 grams of protein. Wow. So that would be a partial fast. So do that a couple of days. You know, I mean, so dip your toe in the water, see how, you know, but that's a great place to start. Yes. But get the book and it'll teach you more.
Okay. And do you have any, you've mentioned you teach doctors. And so we have a lot of doctors listen because we have quite a varied crew. Do you have courses for doctors?
Yeah, Health Centers of the Future. So if you go to HCF, which stands for Health Centers of the Future, hcfevents.com. You can get information. I do seminars. I'm doing another one in November. I just did one a month ago.
Oh, great. Great, great, great. Because it sounds like you put together a very exciting piece of the puzzle for chronic illness. Because, you know, we all have agreed that the gut is the center, but I've never been happy with our dance around it. I've always felt it kind of lacks something. And I think you put a really nice premise, light on it.
Yeah, the premise of hormesis, right? That's really how to fix the gut.
That really is. Well, anyway, so I want to thank you very much. It's really been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Great to have you.